It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In 2010, the city of Pittsburgh imposed a ban on fracking within the city limits after the city council approved the ban. In 2011, voters in State College, Pennsylvania followed suit. And since then, the boroughs of Baldwin, West Homestead, and Wilkinsburg have all banned fracking. They reason that it's harmful to the environment, but opponents of such bans say it's unconstitutional and a senseless way of eliminating jobs and economic growth. Now, the city of Youngstown, Ohio is debating a ban on fracking. I'm joined now in Studio A by reporter Natasha Khan of our content partner Public Source, who went to Youngstown for her story published earlier this month looking at one of many municipalities weighing jobs versus the environment. Natasha Khan, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Also joining us in Studio A is former Pittsburgh City Council President Doug Shields, who spearheaded the city's fracking ban. Doug Shields, good to have you with us.
And thank you for having us, Paul.
And with us by phone is Ross Pfeiffer, clinical professor of law and director of the Agricultural Law Resource and Reference Center at Penn State University. Ross Pfeiffer, thanks for joining us today.
A pleasure to be here.
And if you have a comment or question for our guests, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can always reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Natasha Khan, let's begin by having you characterize the debate that's taking place in Youngstown, Ohio. What concerns do people there have?
Basically, in 2011 and 2012, there was a series of earthquakes that were found to have originated from one injection well used to store wastewater from oil and gas drilling. Eastern Ohio is a hub for these injection wells, mainly filled with wastewater from Pennsylvania. The company that owned the injection well was found by the state to have drilled the well too deep into what's called the Precambrian basement rock. And the wastewater lined a fault line and ignited seismic activity. Interestingly enough, the owner of this injection well was later charged in a separate account of dumping thousands of gallons of wastewater into a tributary feeding the Mahoning River. So it's really these two events that have propelled this group of activists and concerned citizens to try to get a ban in Youngstown passed on drilling and its related activities. And when I say related activities, I mean injection wells, pipelines, compressor stations. In the city of Youngstown, they call their ban a community bill of rights, and the town will vote on it in November. The ban would give residents the bill of rights would give residents of the city rights to clean air, clean water, local self-government. And the ban and it bans certain actions that corporations can take within the city. It's very similar to the ban, the Bill of Rights that was passed in Pittsburgh.
And I want to get into exactly what we did here in the city of Pittsburgh. But before I do that, let's go back to Eastern Ohio. It's a hub for these deep injection wells. Just give us a thumbnail sketch. Describe how these work.
Basically, they're injection wells that are deep beneath the ground surface. They're anywhere from, I believe, 6,000 to 9,000 feet, and it's drilling into limestone and sandstone formations to put wastewater from drilling. It's mainly wastewater from drilling in Pennsylvania. The landscape of Ohio. These injection wells are prolific in eastern Ohio, and it's become this hub for these injection wells.
And so there was the concern about the earthquakes, which it has been reportedly proven that there was a connection between the deep injection wells and the earthquakes. But you reported that the company doing the drilling has denied that its injection well had anything to do with the earthquakes. So what is the proof that the drilling caused the earthquakes?
The state entity that regulates the drilling industry in Ohio, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, put out a preliminary report in 2012 linking the earthquakes to this injection well. It's one injection well called the North Star 1 injection well in Youngstown, Ohio. And then there have been subsequent studies that have been released. A few weeks ago, Columbia University released a study that actually said that there were over 100 of these earthquakes linked to this injection well in Youngstown.
Doug Shields, there was no drilling going on in Pittsburgh when you, as city council president, led the successful push for a ban on fracking in the city. Again, this came 3 years ago. Why was it so important to you to pass a ban at that time?
Well, because we saw the future, quite simply. In 2010, not a lot of us, particularly at the local level, were ever informed of the dynamics of the Marcellus play, the second largest gas play in the world, and none of us were informed as to what might happen in our communities. It really started with the people, as most things do. And we started to see leasing activity within the city of Pittsburgh in neighborhoods like Lawrenceville, Morningside, Lincoln Place in the southern part of the city. And people started to call my office from Lincoln Place and said, what's going on? Literally, landsmen were going door to door offering $1,200 checks, to sign a lease right on the doorstep. And people were like, hey, what's going on? And we went, we don't know. So we started to find out. And what we found out wasn't good. And at that time, we started to hear about places like Dimmock. We heard about places that were having problems with farms down in Washington County. The Hallowitches were, at that point in time, had adverse effects on their health and well-being and loss of their water supply due to contamination. And when you start to study something, and as my good friend Calvin Tillman from Dish Texas says, once you know, you can't not know. And anybody that does any kind of reasonable amount of due diligence on this, he clears hazards. And while we were contemplating this problem, we looked to zoning and land use, and we realized that there is not a solution here, that they are going to frack the city of Pittsburgh. And Katie Klaber came to the council and said, oh, yeah, this will be great. You can lease your parks, your greenways, and you guys are broke and you need the money. And at that time, our concerns were largely centered on water and air issues. Of course, now we know 3 years later there's a plethora of problems associated with this activity. So we did our due diligence. Unfortunately, the state didn't. We got the second largest gas play in the world. Nothing changed. The Oil and Gas Act hadn't been touched since 1984. There was nothing on the books to account for anything. So, and then as we went through 2010, while we were deliberating this amongst ourselves for the large part, guess what? Three wildfires within 4 weeks. Clearfield County had a blowout. They evacuated 2 miles around that area. Indianola, just north of Pittsburgh, 2 men were killed in an explosion, and it burned for hours, 13 hours, I think it was. The same thing in Clearfield. There were no public safety assets around to... They didn't know how to put it out. So, you know, when all these things kind of mounted up and we started to really begin to understand these things, I introduced the bill because I said, look, if you do this under a zoning ordinance, nobody understands zoning. And at the end of the day, you're going to get fracked. It doesn't protect the city. So when I talked to the people at CELDEF, the Community Environmental Defense Fund, Legal Defense Fund, their whole argument was to shift it over into civil rights. And the light bulb went off, and I said, that's it. This is a civil rights issue. It's not about gas and drilling and all this other stuff. It's about rights of individual people and the rights of the people of the city of Pittsburgh to define the character of their community and to define their future.
So the ban is passed in 2010. Your former colleague on the city council, Patrick Dowd, voted in favor of the ban in 2010, but almost exactly 1 year ago to this day, he was a guest on Essential Pittsburgh, and he said that he had a change of heart and wanted to lift the ban. Here's what then-Councilman Dowd had to say about changing his earlier position.
First of all, I was behind the ban at the time, not exclusively. This is the difficult part of my position. I understood why my colleagues wanted to make a political statement in the form of the ban. And given what I would characterize as a very crazy time in 2010 when we saw these leases popping up, I understand that. I felt that too. But I said at that time and was very consistent that we need to have some form of zoning. Because in theory, if we have this ban in place and some company comes in, and I don't anticipate this happening at this point, but if some company were to come in and say, we choose to drill in the city of Pittsburgh, we know that that ban, every lawyer that I've talked to, every council person that I've talked to, we all acknowledge that that ban would not stand up to a legal challenge. And what that means is ultimately the company would have the right to drill basically, you know, with some parameters laid out by the court, not by the city and not by the council. They would have the right to drill eventually in the city. And what I've said from the beginning and I continue to say is we need some form of zoning that places proper restrictions on where this use can be permitted and where it is not permitted, or how one goes about getting the right to do this in the city of Pittsburgh. We have to have that in place. So the ban is an understandable, necessary statement from 2010. But going forward, no matter what happens, I guarantee you we will need to have in place some form of zoning in order to genuinely protect citizens.
Doug Shields, what is your reaction to what Patrick Dowd had to say when he changed his position on the fracking ban last year? Talked about going to zoning. Does he have a point?
Well, zoning doesn't protect anybody. Zoning presumes that the use, whether it be a dry cleaner, a gas station, a steel mill, has an inherent level of acceptable level of safety. I don't see an acceptable level of the safety, and this is why this is really couched under our police powers as a government.
So you're saying that if you set it up and draw it up in such a way that fracking, for example, can't happen near a school, it can't happen near a hospital, or a thickly settled area,
right,
that's not safe enough as far as you're concerned.
Well, show me where you can do that in Pittsburgh. Show me on an industrially zoned piece of property that is not in close proximity to a school or a residential area. I mean, come on. Let's get real here. It's not like, oh, all the residents live over in this side of town and over on the far end of town, 2 miles of open area, nobody's around. You have a wildfire in the city of Pittsburgh. You're talking about an evacuation area of at least a mile. What's the plan for that? We don't have one. There's not one on the books. We don't have a fire department or our first responders trained to deal with any kind of an event at a well site. No one's proposed it, and I can tell you this, it's going to cost a lot of money, and you're going to divert a lot of other city resources away from what they're doing, parks and rec, whatever, policing, and then go to do that. You're assuming that zoning makes it safe. It doesn't do anything. All zoning tells you to do is this is the land that you can use it for. It's residential. It's commercial. The local neighborhood commercial district, Murray and Forbes or Bloomfield, Liberty Avenue, so you don't have incompatible uses. Zoning is not any kind of help with regard to the health, welfare, and safety of the people. And this is the key. In all my years, 20 years on city council, 10 years as a litigation paralegal, I've never seen public policy be made where the health, welfare, and safety component is put into a secondary position over money. And that's what this is about.
Ross Pfeiffer, Penn State law professor, let's bring you into the conversation. Are these bans, like the one in Pittsburgh, the one that Youngstown is considering, are they constitutional? Should there be a concern, as Patrick Dowd pointed out, about that if there's a challenge to these laws, that they won't stand up, these bans?
In Pennsylvania, there is a framework for providing for the extent to which municipalities can regulate natural gas drilling. And that was done through Act 13. There was a framework that was in existence prior to Act 13. Act 13 expanded upon that. The Act 13 is currently in litigation. We're waiting for a Supreme Court decision which will provide us more clarity on exactly what is the extent of permissible municipal authority. But it's clear that there are limitations on the ability of municipalities to regulate natural gas operations.
So let's say, for example, someone was to challenge the ban in Pittsburgh. How strong would it – and I realize that there's a lot of pieces in play here, and Act 13 is one of them – in terms of how it may impact the debate in the future, but from a purely legal standpoint, the way things stand now, how do you see a challenge to the ban in this city playing out?
Well, Act 13 provides what I refer to as three hurdles that municipalities have to get over in order to have a permissible ordinance. The first of those hurdles is that they cannot regulate the same features of oil and gas operations or to accomplish the same purposes that are being accomplished by Act 13. Along or together with that first hurdle, it provides that municipalities can only act to regulate natural gas operations through the municipality's planning code or the Floodplain Management Act. So if the regulation is based on any other authority, that regulation has been preempted by state law. The second hurdle that municipalities have to get over is that any state or federal environmental laws preempt the municipalities from acting. So those federal or state environmental laws completely preempt the field of that particular subject that is addressed by that state or federal law. And then the third hurdle relates to the zoning and provides that municipalities must allow for the reasonable development in their zoning ordinances. This third hurdle was struck down by the Commonwealth Court, and we're waiting for the Supreme Court ruling, which will determine whether the Commonwealth Court opinion will stand or whether there will be some other changes to that. But as Act 13 or in the language of Act 13, it provides for those three hurdles, and so municipalities have to be in compliance with each of those in order to have an ordinance that is going to withstand judicial scrutiny.
So, and we need to go to a break, but just very quickly to clarify. Depending on the ruling on Act 13, it could make a ban in Pittsburgh, it could render it moot.
The ruling will give us much more clarity, but the what is at issue or what was at issue in the Commonwealth Court opinion is that third restriction or limitation that requiring municipalities to provide for the reasonable development. There still could be issues with the Pittsburgh ordinance in the first restriction because the authority that's being utilized is not through the municipality's planning code or the Floodplain Management Act.
And I know that former Pittsburgh City Councilman Doug Shields would like to respond to that, and we'll give him an opportunity to do that. But we do need to take a break. We're talking about the fracking bans that are being considered in other municipalities, other cities like Youngstown, Ohio, based on a recent story by our content partner, Public Source. Our guest who wrote that story, Natasha Kahn, is with us, along with former Pittsburgh City Council President Doug Shields and clinical professor of law at Penn State, Ross Pfeiffer, who you just heard. We'll continue our discussion and welcome your phone calls at 412-246-2002. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about bans on fracking in cities and towns. And I'm joined now in Studio A by reporter Natasha Kahn of our content partner Public Source, who went to Youngstown, Ohio for her story published earlier this month looking at one of the many municipalities weighing jobs versus the environment, as she put it in her story. Also joining us in Studio A is former Pittsburgh City Council President Doug Shields, who spearheaded the city's fracking ban. And with us by phone is Ross Pfeiffer, clinical professor of law and director of the Agricultural Law Resource and Reference Center at Penn State University. As we were going to break, Doug Shields was talking about how Act 13 could potentially impact this debate and the bans that have been put into law in cities like Pittsburgh, as well as the bans being proposed in places like Youngstown, Ohio. And Doug Shields, you wanted to respond to some of what Ross was saying.
Yes, and I'd ask this question back to our legal counselor here, Ross Pfeiffer, is that, one, I took exception with the word regulation. Municipalities don't regulate the oil and gas industry, but they do have the ability by law to decide, you know, what's a proper use, and through their police powers also to say, you know, that, you know, let's go blow dynamite up in the park. Well, you're not allowed to do that. It's not. It's inherently unsafe. So we're not regulating the industry in any way on this matter. We're saying that we find it, by way of our police powers vested to the local authority, that this is an inherently unsafe thing. And there's plenty of evidence out there to suggest it is. The other part that Attorney Pfeiffer brought up was the reasonable standard. Well, is it reasonable to have industrial uses that blow up, that put out benzene, toluene, other volatile organic compounds that are a clear threat to human health? Do they have the right to dump their waste streams into our rivers, which is what they did for 3 years while we yelled at them and they denied that was a problem? I assert that we do, in fact, have those rights to police ourselves. We're not here to regulate the industry. We're telling the industry, you're inherently unsafe. You haven't met the standard of any reasonable in any reasonable way. We see it this way. This use can drop our property values, cause other headaches, you know, all kind of stuff. And it's an incompatible use. And that was brought forward in the Oakmont case in 2009, where Oakmont was going to have some drilling in residential neighborhood, shallow gas wells, not fracking wells. And they lost in court all the way up because the oil and gas industry came to court and said, the Oil and Gas Act trumps the Municipal Planning Act, 100%. Doesn't count. We rule. And they lost all the way up in a Commonwealth Court decision, and then they went to the Supreme Court. And in a unanimous opinion, I think the court, a conservative court at that, and the opinion was unanimous, written by John Saylor, a conservative jurist, and said, look, Municipal Planning Code tells you where you can drill. The Oil and Gas Act tells you how you can drill. And they said, and they're largely based on public safety issues here. You want to do it safe. You don't want incompatible uses on a zoning scheme, and you don't want dangerous operations. But the court said this, and I think this is what really drove Act 13's creation, is that the court said that the Municipal Planning Code does something well beyond that public safety aspect, and it gives the inherent right to the local government to define the character of their own community. Do you want to be a Vegas with big lights and glitz and all that stuff, or you want to be a Little Ligonier or historic look? That's up to the local people.
Do you want to allow oil and gas companies to frack in your city, or do you not?
Well, yeah, and what are you prepared to live with? And just because the industry comes in and spends $28 million buying my state legislature, I got to pay attention to that and say, oh, okay, well, never mind that. I don't think so.
Ross Pfeiffer, what about what Doug Shields is saying?
I think this raises the issue of the interplay between the three basic levels of government, the federal government, the state government, and municipal government. Municipal government are creatures of the state. They are created by the state. They have the authority that is granted to them by the state. And in this case, through Act 13, through Section 3302 of Act 13, municipalities do not have the authority to regulate oil and gas operations unless they are doing it through the Municipalities Planning Code or the Flood Plain Management Act. And when they act through those two statutes, they still have limitations on their ability. So municipalities can't choose to override state law. They have to act within the authority that has been granted to them with the limitations that are imposed upon them by the state.
Natasha Khan, one of the people that you interviewed for your story was Tony Paglia, a spokesman for the Youngstown Regional Chamber and the leader of the coalition opposing the ban on fracking in Youngstown. How did he make his case against the ban?
Basically, the coalition against this proposed ban in Youngstown, they have two main issues with it. They think that this ban will make the city look unfriendly to shale businesses. Eastern Ohio falls under the over the Utica Shale, which has not been as developed as a Marcellus Shale. So it's mainly manufacturers, companies making parts for the shale industry. A $1 billion pipe maker, steel pipe maker plant was constructed last year that created some jobs. So they don't want a ban on fracking to pass because they want the jobs. Youngstown has been in dire straits since the steel industry left it in the 70s. Also, opponents of the ban say it violates Ohio state law because the state legislature gave that right to regulate the oil and gas industry to the Ohio Department of Natural Resources in 2004. So they see this ban in Youngstown as unconstitutional.
Let's listen to some audio from your interview with Tony Paglia.
We think it's unconstitutional, but we also think it sends a message.
Why is it unconstitutional?
Well, because basically they would set up local control over laws, environmental laws, both state and federal. They would maybe supersede that. And we have the Ohio Department of Natural Resources that has jurisdiction over oil and gas in Ohio. We have the federal EPA, but the way, if you read the Community Bill of Rights, they basically say, the local laws will supersede those, and we think that's wrong.
He's pretty certain that a ban on fracking is unconstitutional. Ross Pfeiffer, I'm interested in your take on his comments.
I'm not familiar with the Ohio statutes that would govern this situation, but generally speaking, state law provides the framework under which municipalities can regulate. So, if Ohio has a statute that limits the ability of municipalities to act, then the municipalities cannot act counter to the authority that has been granted to them.
Doug Shields, how do you counter the argument that Tony Paglia makes about how fracking and others make about how fracking and the whole oil and gas industry are helping a town like Youngstown, for example, get back on its feet? I'm sure there are many people who have approached you who say fracking could have the same impact in Pittsburgh, that we need this. It creates jobs. It's great for the economy.
Well, I'm not going to deny that doesn't happen. But it also poses a clear threat to the health, welfare, and safety of the people. And let's get real here.
Didn't the steel industry do that? The things that
didn't we change that? I mean, we stop that? In fact, Pittsburgh was the first place you had air quality standards after a bunch of people in Denora got killed in 1948 or so, 30 or so deaths, and God knows how many people died later because of the exposure to toxic fumes. And this is where this is coming in. I mean, with all due respect to Ross, it's like, yeah, this all works if everything's just hunky-dory and above board and nice. But that's not the case here. Let's get real. You've got a state legislature that took $28 million in Corbett, and the Republican leadership and key Democrats are wallowing in money from the oil and gas industry. They are not. You know, every time something goes bad, they deny it until it's proven that they did it. And then they go, oh, well, we're working to make these environmental standards good. There's a presumption here in some people's minds that this is all done up and above board. Who has the rights here is what this is centered on. Do the rights of the people come on?
Well, and
or the corporations run the show? Come on, you know, let's get real. This law was not written by a bunch of Tom Jeffersons and Madisons, and it was written by the industry itself, and they wrote carte blanche, and they changed the statute in 05 to clean water, clean air. They're exempt from everything. Let's not be silly about this stuff. This is an industry that decided to push the rights of the people away, and I can't find anybody in the state legislature. And I wrote a letter to them. I said, well, if you're going to have an impact fee, give me a list of the impacts. If you're going to have a 2,000-foot setback now instead of 200, what's the science behind that? I couldn't get an answer out of anybody. Go ask any elected official, did they get notice of anything? Did the state legislature hold hearings? Did they do due diligence and come back to the people and say, what do you think? No. The public was cut out.
And speaking of the public, let's go to the phones. We have Lisa from Newcastle on the line. Lisa, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, hello. This is Lisa. I'm calling to say that the industry doesn't like us fighting back, and as a citizen of this country, we are fighting back. We're meeting up. We're gathering. We're fighting back for the initial rights that we were given by our government to clean air. The Pennsylvania Constitution says I have a right to clean air, pure water, and the preservation of natural, scenic, historic, and aesthetic values of the environment. They don't like when we question these things. And I would question anyone to know into the future whether these bans would last or not, because we need these things. There is a well 500 yards or feet from a school in Butler County that flared on a Monday after school started. I would like to know why.
Lisa, I appreciate your sentiments. It seems that the legislation around Marcellus Shale is evolving over time. In Allegheny County, in Allegheny County Council, a 3-year hold has been proposed instead of a ban. Ross Pfeiffer, how long do you think the industry can be kept at bay in communities where a ban has been instituted?
We have a ruling from the Supreme Court in the pending litigation over Act 13. I think it's likely that there will still be some limitations on municipal governments from acting, regardless of the specifics of the ruling. And I think at that point, we likely will have some of the specific ordinances involved in litigation, and that's going to provide more guidance in terms of exactly what can municipalities do.
Let's take a call from Nancy in Squirrel Hill. Nancy, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I'm telephoning as a healthcare provider, and nationally, I have met up at different conferences with individuals. I don't see this any different than any other big corporation that has a lot of money that we haven't regulated, where they continue to say, prove it. How do you know we damaged your water? And just like, prove it. How do you know that cigarette caused you lung cancer? Prove it. And it is just the problem with greed and with money, and how we, all this rhetoric is just a way to distract from the bottom line that this is an unregulated industry that is out of control.
Doug Shields, I'm guessing that you would certainly hold Nancy's comments you would feel that they hold their weight.
Well, Nancy's comments and the comments of many citizens find themselves at the bottom of a vortex where the illusion was that the citizen had some voice in this matter. And they can put you through a zoning process and everything else, and you think there's a means of redress to your grievances by way of your institutions of government. And what a lot of people like Nancy have found out is that you don't. It's an illusion. And I agree with Ross in that, you know, this someday will go to court. But the fact of the matter is that you have bans in Pittsburgh, West Homestead, Wilkinsburg, Forest Hills, Baldwin, Borough.
And all those places came after Pittsburgh.
Exactly. And then after that, State College, Pennsylvania, by a margin of 72%, the citizens there voted to amend this ordinance to their constitution for their town, their home rule charter. Now, here's the problem. Let's move this from the law to politics. I want to see Governor Corbett go into law, into a court of law, and argue that nobody has any rights and those votes that were cast in State College don't count for anything. That's what's so offensive about what's going on here. And it is about rights. And maybe you might win in a court of law, but you're going to lose in a court of public opinion when you go out and tell the public in Pennsylvania that you really don't have anything to say about this. We decided up here in Harrisburg without coming to you, the citizen, who is the government, by the way. The citizen is the government. And there was never, ever any kind of legislative action to go out to the community, hold hearings, do due diligence, do a health study we can consult, all that stuff. So I would question the legitimacy of what the state legislature did by way of the Constitution.
That's Doug Shields, the former president of the Pittsburgh City Council, as we have come to time for this segment. But this is an ongoing discussion, and I'm sure we will be revisiting it here on the program. Want to especially thank Natasha Kahn, reporter with our content partner Public Source, for her story on fracking, the proposed fracking ban in Youngstown, for joining us here in studio. I thank you so much, Natasha, for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to former Pittsburgh City Council President Doug Shields for joining us as well here in Studio A. And also to Doug Pfeiffer, the law professor at Penn State, for joining us. Thank you so much, Doug. Ross Pfeiffer, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
Coming up, business contributor Rebecca Harris on the evolution of the neighborhood drugstore. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.